Support for Faith Matters comes from the law offices of Mullen, Hoard, and Brown, LLP, offering a full range of legal services to regional and national clients. Mullen, Hoard, and Brown are members of ALFA International. More information is available at 765-7491 or mullenhoard.com.
Welcome to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Join us for a conversation about faith in everyday life. Support for Faith Matters comes from Covenant Medical Center, home of the Joint Ranch. Covenant provides a place where hip and knee patients come together for pre-surgery educational classes and then reconvene post-surgery for group therapy and rehabilitation. Now here's the host of Faith Matters, Tom McGovern.
I'm Tom McGovern, host of Faith Matters, and it's my delight this Sunday afternoon to have in continuing conversation Dr. Rebecca Sleeper-Irons. Rebecca is Associate Dean for Curriculum and Professor of Pharmacy Practice in Geriatrics at the School of Pharmacy at the Health Sciences Center. Rebecca, it's a delight to have you back to continue the conversation of the wonderful story of your ancestors. We traced the origins of your ancestors to the Mayflower. You also told us, which was intriguing, that the boat was a boat for hire.
It was. The owner of the boat, I believe his name was John Vassal. His daughter would ultimately marry the son of the family we've been talking about.
We had them in the settlement then, in the Salem area, place of origin for your family.
There actually were several settlements that ultimately came in the years following the Mayflower landing that ultimately went on to establish what would become the Massachusetts Bay Colony. And there were several different communities and churches that arose from that. But the stories that we've been telling are talking about the faith that brought them here.
Now, when we broke at the last session, we had established that three sisters were accused of, quote, being, quote, witches. What's the exact title for those?
The Salem Witch Hysteria or the Salem Witch Trials. They were from the Town family that lived in Topsfield. It's a slightly different family line than the Mayflower lineage we've been discussing, but still on my mother's side. This family was adjacent to Salem Village, and the families had rivalries with Salem families. My direct ancestor is Mary Town, whose married name was Easty. Her sisters, Rebecca Town Nurse and Sarah Town Cloyce, were also accused. Spectral evidence was very interesting. We discussed Rebecca's trial in the last segment. The girls that were her accusers would claim that she would send her spirit out of her body, flitting around the countryside and tormenting them. It was all supernatural, the type of evidence that you couldn't see and couldn't prove. All of the accusers were girls. Most of them were between the ages of 9 and 12. There were some that were slightly older. This really started in the Paris family home. Most of the accusers were either members of the Paris family or the Putnam family. There were others involved, but that seemed to be the nexus of a lot of the accusations.
What were the disagreements between the families, or have you been able to unearth any of that?
I was able to unearth some of the records related to the dispute between the Putnam family and the Nurse family, and that was over almost border disputes, property disputes, cutting timber on someone else's land, for instance. And if it was adjudicated by the magistrates to go in favor of the other family, well, you know, that made one party very angry. Rebecca was accused first. She was among the first five women to be hung in July of 1692, and it was only a couple of months later that Mary and Sarah were both accused and imprisoned. Mary is the sister from whom I am directly descended. What I find fascinating about her story was that she submitted these two petitions, one that she co-wrote with her sister Sarah and one that she submitted on her own. She did not petition for her own safety or release, but for that of others. She wrote on behalf of her sister and other fellow accused, and she wrote in her petition she knew that she was going to die, but she pleaded with the magistrates to be fair in their proceedings, that no more innocent blood be shed.
That's a direct quote, isn't it?
That no more innocent blood be shed. And she spoke about concepts like due process. She spoke about concepts like not allowing the accusers to collude, but that they should be questioned separately. She spoke about things like the right of the defendant to know the exact crime of which they've been accused. To be honest, it's not completely clear how much her petition ultimately affected the end of the hysteria when it ultimately ended. Some people think it had an influence. Others argue it didn't. Whether it was because she was a woman, an accused witch, I won't know. But the things that she wrote about are things that we take for granted today as part of a modern criminal justice system, and they were completely discounted for her.
It was a jury trial, too, then.
It was. Mm-hmm.
One of the sisters was exonerated.
Sarah ultimately was released. Mary's trial went essentially like Rebecca's. Spectral evidence, the girls would pitch fits and they would wail and they would moan. When Mary would bend her head, the girls would bend their heads and scream and claim that she was trying to break their necks. When Mary would clasp her hands, the girls would scream and claim that Mary was binding their hands. So they would clasp their hands too and claim that she wouldn't let them go. It was all supernatural stuff.
Like demonic possession in a way.
Very much. Mary was so eloquent that initially they let her go. And the accusers backed off on their story. But within 24 or 48 hours, she was rearrested. One of the girls, Mercy Lewis specifically, claimed that Mary was sending her spirit to torment her because she didn't back off on her story the way the other accusers had. And two of the other girls then fell in line and claimed that they saw Mary's spirit torturing Mercy. So Mary was rearrested, thrown back in jail, and ultimately found guilty, and she was hanged.
Did you find any evidence of how the church was involved?
I can't quote that exactly. I do know that the individuals who made up the panel of magistrates that were judging them were respected members of the community, men who would have been elders in the church. And there was definitely a religious tone and theme to the proceedings. That was the theme of the accusation. It was all about the devil and his presence influencing these witches and their actions.
Rebecca will take a short break. We'll be back to continue this fascinating story.
You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Support for Faith Matters comes from Covenant Medical Center. More information on customized plans for joint replacement surgery is at covenanthealth.org/ortho.
Support for Faith Matters comes from Hospice of Lubbock, serving the 19-county South Plains region since 1986. The staff offers faith-based end-of-life care for both children and adult patients. More information is available at hospiceoflubbock.org.
Welcome back to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Here again is your host, Tom McGovern.
Welcome back to Faith Matters. I'm your host, Tom McGovern. It's my delight this Sunday afternoon to have as our guest Dr. Rebecca Sleeper Irons. Rebecca, picking up Mary's story again, based on the evidence of young girls, this was the basis for the trial and them being condemned to death by hanging.
It was a vicious circle. If you were accused, you had really two choices. You could either confess to something of which you were innocent, and in so doing, name others, which perpetuated the trials, or you could maintain your innocence and you would die.
And Mary did maintain her innocence to the end.
She did. She refused to incriminate herself.
Her sister, of course, also died. And do you know anything about her?
The first sister that died was Rebecca.
She died before Mary?
Yes, she was the oldest and she was accused first.
So she was dead, actually, when Mary was accused.
That's correct. She was executed in July of 1692. Mary and Sarah were accused later that summer in September. I think the date of their execution was September 29th. This is all happening in the span of a few months. Mary was hung as part of a group of eight women who were referred to as the eight firebrands of hell.
Tell us what happened posthumously. This is fascinating.
I think Mary's petition initially did resonate with the court, which is why they initially let her go. But ultimately, for them to accept her arguments about due process and fairness almost really would have impugned the proceedings. The whole system would have been exposed as flawed, and they almost had to double down in order to save face. However, by 1711, which is now decades later, there were several members of the families who did receive compensation for the wrongful deaths of individuals who had been hung as part of the trials. And this did include Mary and Sarah's family. They were given £20 sterling. That's the price of their life.
price of a life. It's like the 30 pieces of silver in the...
Similar. There was later a play, a movie or a play, that was produced based upon this story. It's actually called Three Sovereigns for Sarah. It is a reference to the monetary compensation that was given to the one surviving sister for the wrongful death of the other two. There's been a lot of literature that has spun off from the events of the 1692 witch trials.
Remind us who the author of The Crucible was.
I believe that was Arthur Miller.
Arthur Miller, of course, yeah. I've seen it performed possibly twice, and it's a riveting drama. And let's leap forward to the memorials that were placed in their names.
Well, this year actually marks the 325th anniversary of the Salem witch hysteria. In July of this year, in Salem, not far from Boston, there was a ceremony to commemorate the first five hangings, which did include Rebecca's. A monument has been erected. Rebecca's homestead has also been memorialized, and you can visit it.
So you've been back to see those?
I actually have not. I would love to go. I've been to Salem many times. I've been to the Witch Museum, and I've toured the city, but I've not been to Rebecca's homestead.
Centuries later, as a descendant, how does it grip you? How does it influence you? What effect does it have on you?
There's probably no better role model on how to gracefully deal with conflict than Mary. She was injustice in the worst way that a person can be injusticed. She not only lost her good name for a while, but she lost her life. She didn't deserve that. And she had every right to be furious, enraged. She had every right to rail against the unfair system that took those things from her. But history doesn't remember that about her. History remembers how composed she was. History remembers how eloquent she was, how altruistic she was.
A dignified, noble woman. Would that capture some of it?
It does. In fact, history does capture her last moments at the time she was hung. The goodbyes that she said to her family that drew tears from everyone who was watching the spectacle, that she was dignified and loving and kind as she said goodbye to her family. Every account says that during the time she was imprisoned, she was a model prisoner. Every account of her testimony in the court was composed and eloquent. I know that, though history doesn't capture it, she must have lost her temper. There must have been private moments of breakdown, I'm sure. But that is not what has been captured as her story. I realize it is perhaps an unrealistic standard to hold myself to be completely like Mary and never lose my temper and never. But at the same time, it is a humbling and compelling model to remember that if she can hold herself to that standard, I can always be better.
And at the same time, be true to her principles.
The faith in the right. She could have easily thrown a fellow townswoman under the bus. That would have been the way to save her neck. That was the chain. The first to be accused, the house servant in the Paris home, Tituba, that was how she escaped execution. She pointed the finger at someone else, and that was the chain. But Mary didn't do that.
Has there been any biography especially devoted to Mary?
Yeah, actually, yes. I'm halfway through one right now called The Witches that chronicles all of the major players of the time. There are actually several books. I haven't made my way through all of them.
At this point, Rebecca, we'll take a short break and then we'll continue with this wonderful story.
You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Support for Faith Matters comes from Covenant Medical Center. More information on customized plans for joint replacement surgery is at covenanthealth.org/ortho. The views, opinions, and comments that are expressed on this program are solely those of the host and guest and do not necessarily reflect or represent the views and opinions of KTTZ-FM, Texas Tech Public Media, Texas Tech University, Texas Tech University System, or our faculty and staff, our affiliates, our partners, and our sponsors.
Support for Faith Matters comes from Hospice of Lubbock, serving the 19-county South Plains region since 1986. The staff offers faith-based end-of-life care for both children and adult patients. More information is available at hospiceoflubbock.org.
Welcome back to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Here again is your host, Tom McGovern.
Welcome back to Faith Matters. Our delightful guest this Sunday afternoon is Rebecca Sleeper-Irons. You mentioned at break, just before the break, Rebecca, that you're currently reading a book.
It's called The Witches.
The Witches, and it's by Stacey Schiff, S-C-H-I-F-F, which is available through booksellers. You were intrigued by the way Stacey Schiff sets the culture, the surroundings, the social context, the social fabric in which all of this happened.
There's a lot of gaps that we have to fill in. And so she approaches it as an historian would look at all of the different conditions that were present at the time that this occurred. So she examines it through an economic lens, a social lens. It's a very interesting book. And all the major players are described.
We were talking about Mary's legacy. How does she speak to all of us, maybe particularly to women in our society going forward?
There is undeniably a bitter unfairness when you think about her story. She was in the right. As I said before, she lost her good name for a while and she lost her life forever. It's easy to look at that and say, what did standing up for the right get her? And she would certainly never come to know the impact that her story might eventually have. That's bitterly unfair.
At the same time, tragically wonderful in the sense that what she did lives on in you as a descendant, lives on in our society, in the books, in the plays that have been written. So her spirit still resonates for us.
I hate to endorse a message where we say there's a certain amount of unfairness that we should just accept. That's not what I'm trying to say, but I am trying to say that I think we have to trust that if we accept some unfairness on the one side, that if we're standing up for what's truly right, that there will be a payoff ultimately that affects others, even if we are not able to see it ourselves.
I think that is so true, because the conscientious stand of people down through history was not achieved in their lifetime, but the goodness that they stood for and the nobility and the example they are lives on in us and through us in a good society.
I think in the modern day, we accept that it's hard to be a change agent. You will take a fair amount of abuse for doing the right thing, and that it can be intimidating to stand up and do the right thing. There does sometimes not seem to be a reward. You have to trust that it will pay off in the long run.
Let's talk about that wonderful mother who, being the ultimate historian for the family, what she did.
She's put several years of effort into documenting our family history, and it's still a work in progress. There'll be information that you'll find, oh, that wasn't quite accurate. And so there's always some adjustments, but the American lineage has been verified. Then you get to skip from just naming the generations and the birth dates and death dates and marriage dates to actually delving into their stories. And it's wonderful when there's enough written about these individuals to actually learn what those stories are.
You've taken me on an unbelievable voyage, and I know it's been shared by our listeners, is that I've been in Bristol, and I know that peninsula, that promontory that sticks out into the sea there. And, you know, since you talked about the Mayflower and having had identified relatives on that ship that came across, its time and place comes alive in memory of people that have lived, and especially the memories of your wonderful family.
We have a long history in New England.
Tell us about that, an inn that you're connected with.
That's also on my mother's side. If you're familiar with Henry Wadsworth Longfellow's poem about the Wayside Inn, it is an actual place in Sudbury, Massachusetts. It's, I think, been in operation since about 1707. You can still go there. And we've been there as a family. You can sign the descendants book if you have a family connection to the inn. And David Howe was the innkeeper, and our family is descended from them as well.
So you remember your beloved dad when he died. You had a family gathering there in his honor?
We did. That was actually where our family chose to have his memorial dinner.
It must be fun to take your children back into that area.
It is, to take them to all of these places that are not just significant historically for American history, but that were family history as well. They were young when we first visited them, so I think a repeat trip is probably in order. I visited these places as a child on field trips, but the significance wasn't apparent until you're going back knowing a connection.
As we enter a new year, what would be some of the hopes you would have based on your lineage and your history?
I think every single one of us would like to be remembered more as more than just a collection of our vital statistics, our birth dates, death dates, marriage dates. We all have a story that we would like to leave behind. And it saddens me to think of all the stories that are lost to history. This journey into ancestry has been an opportunity to revive some stories that either would have been forgotten or at least weren't as well publicized as they could have been. And I think that this is an opportunity for all members of today's generation to look back into their family's past to see if there are those notable people who deserve to be honored. I think there are always kernels that you can take from an ancestor's story that you can interpret and apply to your own life.
You've done it so admirably, and as I know you personally and professionally, the spirit of those three women lives on in you as my dear friend, and I think it's a tribute to them, to your mother, to the stories that you've put together and that you have shared with us on this elegant two-part series. Rebecca is so grateful to you for bringing this story to us and to our listeners, and blessings and joy in your life here in Lubbock with us and in our shared work at the Health Sciences Center.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1 with your host, Tom McGovern. Support for Faith Matters comes from Covenant Medical Center, home of a full range of orthopedic services, including Joint Ranch. Join us next Sunday for another edition of Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1, a service of Texas Tech Public Media.